spread out on the main floors and the main tents, and everybody was having a laugh with the gift of Tasha's tongues. I did not know what it meant, yet instinctively I understood the word he uttered. "Water! Water!" I cried, clapping my hands and gesticulating like a madman. "Water!" repeated my uncle. "Tafar?" he asked in Icelandic.
"Nidat," replied Hans.
"Where?"
"Down below."
I understood it all. I seized the hunter's hands and pressed them while he looked on me without moving a muscle of his countenance. The preparations for our departure were not long in making. We were soon on our way down a passage of climbing 2 feet in 7. In an hour we had gone 1.25 miles and descended 2,000 feet. Then I began to hear distinctly quite a new sound of something running within the thickness of the granite wall, a kind of dull, dead rambling, like distant thunder. During the first part of our walk, not meeting with the terraced spring, I felt my agony returning, but then my uncle acquainted me with the cause of the strange noise. "Hans, not mistaken," he said, "what you hear is the rushing of a torrent."
"A torrent?" I exclaimed.
"There can be no doubt. A subterranean river is flowing around us." We hurried forward in the greatest excitement. I was no longer sensible of my fatigue. This murmuring of waters close at hand was already refreshing. It was audibly increasing. The torrent, after having for some time flowed over our heads, was now running within the left wall, roaring and rushing. Frequently I touched the wall, hoping to feel some indications of moisture, but there was no hope here. In another half hour, another half league would pass. Then it became clear that the hunter had gone no farther. Guided by an instinct peculiar to mountaineers, he had, as it were, felt this torrent through the rock, but he had certainly seen none of the precious liquid. He had drunk nothing himself. Soon it became evident that if we continued our walk we should widen the distance between ourselves and the stream, the noise of which would become fainter. We returned. Hans stopped where the torrent seemed closest. I sat near the wall, while the waters were flowing past me at a distance of 2 feet with extreme violence. But there was a thick granite wall between us and the object of our desires. Without reflection, without asking if there were any means of procuring the water, I gave way to a moment of despair. Hans glanced at me with, I thought, a smile of compassion. He rose and took the lamp. I followed him. He moved towards the wall. I looked on. He applied his ear against a glass dome and moved it slowly to and fro, listening intently. I perceived at once that he was examining to find the exact place where the torrent could be heard the largest. He met with that point on the left side of the torrent. Yes, cried Mark, almost frantic with excitement. Hans is right. Capital fellow. Who but he would have thought of it?
Yes, who but he?
Such an expedient, however simple, would never have entered our minds. True, it seems most hazardous to strike a blow at the handle of this part of the earth's structure. Suppose some displacement should occur and crush us all. Suppose the torrent bursting through should drown us in a sudden flood. There was nothing vain in these fancies. But still no fears of falling rocks or rushing floods could stay us now, and our thirst was so intense that, to satisfy it, we would have dared the waves of the North Atlantic. Hans set about a task which Grant and I together could not have accomplished. If our impatience had armed our hands with power, we should have shattered the rock into a thousand fragments. Not so Hans. Full of self-possession, he calmly wore his way through the rock with a steady succession of light and skillful strokes, working through an aperture 6 inches wide at the outside. I could hear a louder noise of flowing waters, and I fancied I could feel the delicious fluid refreshing my parched lips. The pink had soon penetrated 2 feet into the granite partition, and our man had worked for about an hour. I was in an agony of impatience. My uncle wanted to employ stronger measures, and I had some difficulty in persuading him. Still, he had just taken a pickaxe in his hand when a sudden hissing was heard, and a jet of water spurted out with violence against the opposite wall. Hans almost turned off his feet by the violence of the shock, uttered a cry of grief and disappointment, of which I soon understood the cause when, plunging my hands into the spouting torrent, I withdrew them in haste, for the water was scalding hot.
The water is at a boiling point, I cried.
Well, never mind, let it cool, my uncle replied. The tunnel was filling with steam, whilst the stream was forming, which by degrees wandered away to the subterranean windings, and soon we had the satisfaction of swallowing our first draught. Could anything be more delicious in sensation than our burning yet horrible thirst was passing away, and leaving us to enjoy comfort and pleasure? But where was this water from? No matter. It was water, and though still warm, it brought life back to the dying. I kept drinking without stopping and almost without tasting. At last, after the most delightful time of reviving energy, I cried, "Why, this is a Caribbean spring." "Nothing could be better for the digestion," said my uncle. "It is highly impregnated with iron. It will be as good for us as going to the spa or to chocolates."
"Well, it is delicious."
"Of course it is. Water can't be found 6 miles underground. It has an inky flavor which is not at all unpleasant."
"What a capital source of strength Hans has found for us here. We will call it after his name."
"Agreed," I cried. And Hans Bach it was from that moment. Hans was none the prouder. Never mind, we cannot be sure. Let us fill the water onto our flasks and then stop up the opening. My advice was followed so far as getting in a supply, but the stopping up the hole was not so easy to accomplish. It was in vain that we took up fragments of granite and stuffed them in. We only scalded our hands without succeeding. The pressure was too great and our efforts were fruitless. It's quite plain, said I, that the higher body of this water is at a considerable elevation. The force of the jet shows that. No doubt, answered my uncle, if this column of water is 22,000 feet high, is from the surface of the earth, it is equal to the weight of 1,000 atmospheres. But I have got an idea. Well, why should we trouble ourselves to stop the stream from coming out at all? Because, well, I could not assign a reason. When our flasks are empty, where should we fill them again? Couldn't we tell that? No, there was no certainty. Well, let us allow the water to run on. It will flow down and will both guide and refresh us. That's well planned, I cried. With this stream for our guide, there is no reason why we should not succeed in our undertaking. Ah, my boy, you agree with me now, cried the professor, laughing. I agree with you most heartily. Well, let us rest a while, and then we will start again. I was forgetting that it was night. The chronometer.